Now back in the saddle, covering the Seahawks and Oregon and more for the Oregonian. Hit him up on Twitter. You could use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are you and yours doing this week?
We're doing fine, man. We're doing fine. How about you?
All is well. All is well. Nobody cares anyway. It's just me. So, you teased earlier in the week on Twitter, when the opt-outs in college football hit, then the announcements that football's coming back, a lot of people were like, well, could the players who opted out come back? Apparently, D'Amador Lenore can, because, well, first of all, he's a really talented guy, obviously experienced. How big is this for the Oregon secondary?
Man, I think it's pretty huge. I mean, they were looking at losing after Brees opted out. You're looking at four of your best five DBs out, or your best five returning DBs, experienced DBs are out. That's hard to replace in one season. And you know, clearly there's a lot of good talent that was sort of bubbling under the surface there. I mean, we've seen Wright, we've seen McKinley, you know, so there's dudes there, and they recruited well at that position. So, you know, I don't think it was doom and gloom. So it wasn't a matter of going from, you know, great to bad. You know, it was going from great to probably still pretty darn good, right? But still, great is better than pretty darn good. So to face that was not optimal. You know, you get back D'Amador, you still lost three impact guys and your best defensive back, all-around DB in Holland. But at least you get a stud corner. You know, that's locked down. You got Wright at the other corner. You're going to feel pretty good about that because in the long run, Wright, because of his speed, could ultimately be a better NFL DB prospect than Graham. And Graham was really good as a freshman, so I would expect Wright to be better at this point in his career than maybe Graham was as a freshman at least, and that was pretty good. And so now you're set at corner. You got Pickett still. You know, McKinley's played a lot at safety, so you're still pretty darn good because now you know you have at least one corner locked down with a super experienced and accomplished young man.
You know, you mentioned Holland, and I know you wrote about him. I figured under normal circumstances, he plays this year, he's first team all Pac-12, maybe an All-American, and then he goes in the first round. But so you wrote about him, and he's always seemed kind of different, kind of a special guy. I would say aware beyond just football. I mean, what have you learned about this kid?
Oh, yeah, his social media platforms, yeah. Twitter and Instagram, are very lively. He speaks out and against just about anything you can imagine that has to do with, you know, any type of social injustices, racism, sexism. He's all over it. You know, I can't predict his future necessarily, but I could definitely see him getting into politics in some capacity or maybe, you know, going to law school or whatever. Or doing both. You know, he's made it clear that he just has this in him where he just feels like the need to speak out against things, and when he doesn't do it, he feels like he's missing an opportunity, and he wants to use his platform to do that. And he knows that there are some fans who just want him to stick to football, but he's like, I'm not having it. Like, that's not who I am. And if you don't like how I present myself, then don't follow me. I mean, I'm not going to cry about it. But, you know, I mean, you're right about the football side. You know, yeah, he obviously would have played this year. They all would have if it was a full season on schedule. And it probably would have definitely helped his stock. I think, though, you know, when the Pac-12 announced it was coming back, Holland hadn't formally announced what he was doing, although all signs pointed to him opting out just as Sewell did. But you thought, or I thought, well, with a six-game season, maybe he'd feel like it was worth it. He'll get some more work. But you got to factor in, you know, he was a part of the Pac-12 players movement that was going hard against Larry Scott and basically, you know, declaring or accusing them of using them to make money while not putting forth a plan to protect them, and that the whole system proved how important they are financially. So the idea to me in my mind before he declared or opted out officially was that, well, he can't come back. Like, you can't be that strongly against what's going on and come back for six games. And when he finally did decide he wasn't coming back, I asked him, because I already pretty much written most of that article, and he said, "Yeah." I go, "That's part of the reason why I was going to play in the six-game season." And he feels confident about his draft status. Now, I did talk to one scout about him and Sewell, and he kind of said the same thing about the both. And I think this applies more to Holland and Sewell, because Sewell is a lock top 10 pick, right? Maybe top five. But that, you know, the downside to not playing, especially when you're that young, because those are two true sophomores, right?
Yep.
Is that they're losing that third year of tape. And he said, we hardly ever go back to the freshman year. Like, the freshman year, they're little kids, because you got to play three. So by the time they're a junior or a redshirt sophomore, it's like the freshman year, there should be nothing I should go back and look at in the freshman year that means anything to me, because you should be 2 years removed from whatever garbage you put up on film that time, right? Not that it's really garbage, but you got the point. So now you only really have 1 year to look at for Holland. Now I guess you would go back to the freshman year because you only have the two, but the freshman year you really don't care that much about. This is all according to him. So he said, so the problem is, okay, let's say I have Holland second, third round on my board, but I have six other safeties in that area, and I got 3 years of tape on them because they all played this season. Who am I going to err on the side? You know, if I'm flipping a coin, who am I going to pick? I'll pick the guy who has the most evidence of who can perform. Now, if Holland's tape is just so much better, if Holland has five games that are way better than all 3 years of one guy, then no problem. That's the situation with Sewell. With Sewell, you could pick one play, and that was better than anything that every other tackle nation did since, you know, actually, the scout I talked to him about Sewell, he said he's the best offensive tackle he scouted since Jonathan Ogden.
Wow.
Exactly. And I'm actually writing about that now. I talked to Tyler Johnstone, Jeff Schwartz, and Kyle Long, all former Oregon linemen, about how good they think Sewell's going to be, and an NFL scout. I'm writing that article either for this week or early next week. And so when you have someone that great, it don't matter how much they played. Holland, on the other hand, could become great, but he probably could have used the extra year to really push himself, you know, into the first round. And so who knows? I'm not even predicting this is going to happen, but the speculation by this scout is that by not playing this year, he's looking at second, maybe early third.
Oh, all right. Interesting. Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Let's get to the NFL. So after a couple of weeks of Mitch Trubisky, they'd seen enough. Nick Foles was in there. And in a stunner, Nick Foles wasn't exactly a just add water answer. That's a good defense the Colts have. But what were you thinking watching the Bears last week about Foles being at the helm now?
So are you telling me I was in error when I took the three touchdown passes he threw in one quarter against Atlanta and multiplied that by four and thought he was going to throw 12 against the Colts? Are you telling me that was...
Your math was a little off.
Just a little off? Okay. Not surprised at all. It was such a bear thing to happen. Midway through the second quarter, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Now, the Colts have a good defense. Okay, don't get me wrong. But still, it's like this. It doesn't matter what the Chicago Bears do. If they had signed Tom Brady, or traded for Tom Brady, or Cam Newton, they would suck too. It's just if you put on a Bears uniform as a quarterback, there's a curse. Something happened. Sid Luckman's grandmother put a curse on the Bears or something, because it doesn't matter what they do. And so in the third quarter, though, I'm thinking, you know what? If Nick Foles can't hit a target and can't run, just throw Trubisky back in there and just play playground ball and see if he can make a couple plays with his feet and win the game for you. And they didn't even go to him. Like, they're committed to Foles until the wheels fall off. But, you know, that was extremely depressing. I got my Peyton jersey on. They're 3-0. I got my Peyton jersey on this Sunday. built my little nest on the couch in front of the TV, got my snacks, told everyone in the house to leave me alone for 3 hours. And I was just sobbing.
You'd have been better off playing a video game.
exactly.
Few final thoughts. The Seahawks, just for opener, when you think about Irvin, Marquise Blair, done for the year. Quentin Dunbar not practicing. Mayo was limited. Rasheem Green up front went down for the year. The kid from Utah, Cody Barton, is questionable. I mean, how concerned should fans of the Seahawks be about the defense, you know, giving up a lot of points and having enough bodies?
Yeah. Well, they were giving up a lot of points anyway. I think everyone pretty much figured the defense was going to be, you know, marginal. So maybe that's not the most horrific situation. Because it's not going from a great defense to being bad. They're going from being pretty mediocre to probably being bad. And as long as Russell Wilson's throwing four touchdown passes a game, then does it really matter what the defense does at this point? But no, I think long term, you know, we're going to see some games, I think, you know, where Wilson's not going to light it up. And if the defense just keeps getting depleted and just keep putting so much pressure on the offense, then, yeah, losses are going to pile up. My only concern for them at this point is that, yes, they are 4-0, but two of the wins are against two of the worst teams in the league, Miami and Atlanta. And the other two wins came by one play, basically, against New England and Dallas. Now, that's the NFL, right? They won. I'm not taking anything away from them in those games. They won them, but they're not firm wins. So I wonder, like, looking ahead when they play San Francisco, looking ahead when they play at Buffalo, when they got the Rams twice, right? Like, you start looking at those games. Now, they got Giants and Jets. They should smoke them. Washington, they should smoke them. There's some favorable games. But you look at those two Rams, the 49er games, and you start wondering about the division. But 49ers have their own injury problems, right? Folks is out for the year. Jimmy Garoppolo is, you know, banged up. So we'll see what happens. But as long as Russell Wilson is going to keep lighting up like this, I mean, he has a chance to throw 50 touchdowns. You know, what the record's 55, Manning, right?
Yep.
I mean, as of right now, he's on pace for that. So if he continues to do that, it won't matter what the defense does.
Yeah, put up 40 points a game, no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
The offensive line, and I think I saw Dwayne Brown now has been limited in practice with a knee injury. They put Yapati on the injury list. Center right are new, be it running the ball, keeping Russell Wilson upright. What do you make of how the big fellas up front are playing?
Yeah, that's a concern. I mean, I think moving forward with some of the aging bodies they have on that team, the two most experienced guys, you know, you wonder, you know, how long, you just said, he probably is on the injury list already. What's going to happen with Brown? Who knows? But he was banged up a lot last year. So they kind of rolled the dice with that line, sort of, I felt, putting it together. I think they felt like they were, you know, they had to move on from Fetty and Britt. I don't think that, and Fluker. Fluker I was surprised about, but I think they felt like they could go out and just get some guys and put them in front of Russ, and they might improve the pass protection portion of their offensive line with maybe a little better athleticism up there on the right side, and maybe they've accomplished that, and it looks like they want to build everything around Wilson now. So that's a good move on their part. But, you know, if the injuries start piling up and you lose your left tackle and you lose experience, that's when you start, you know, getting worried when you play those teams we talked about. Like, I think the at-Buffalo game is going to be tough because Buffalo likes to get after on defense. You know, if your offensive line's not right, Russell Wilson's not going to be right.
And lastly, my man from Wayne Hills High School in Jersey, Greg Olsen at tight end. Now Disley's hurt. He's had 10 catches the past two games. So what's the word about how the vet is now mixing in with that offense?
You know, they obviously like him, and they brought him in for this reason. If Disley went down, you know, you have a veteran guy who's proven. But, man, he doesn't look like the same Olsen. Like, he looks like he's crossed over to the other side, right? And it would be best if Disley were back to his old self and Olsen were sort of like the sidekick. You know, he's had some passes where he hasn't made the play when you think he would. And I'm not even talking about the drop pick six he had against Dallas. So, you know, I worry over the course of a long season if he can hold up, one, physically, and two, if he's going to make enough plays to make – I mean, they had to make that move to bring someone in, but if he's going to make enough plays to keep that position – where it needs to be.
Yeah, I was looking at his draft, and it's like, wow, Calvin Johnson, Joe Thomas, Marshawn Lynch were in his draft. He's old. So,
yeah.
Folks, wow. He's Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Always appreciate your time, my friend. May you and your family be well, and we'll chat again next week.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy.